Good morning, everyone. Welcome. Let's get started for the January Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission meeting. We're going to start out with the presentation of the colors. I'm thrilled to have them here, so thank you.
Please stand for the presentation of the colors.
Please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Raise it home. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Order home. Ready?
And now join us in observing a moment of silence as we remember the law enforcement and conservation professionals who have gone on before us. Thank you.
Honor Guard, stand by. Attention. Forward, arm. Left, face. Mark time, arm. Left. Forward, mark.
Heather, thank you, and thank you everyone for being here. I love that presentation of the colors. If that doesn't give you chills and make you proud to be American, I don't know what does. We'll move right into approving the minutes. One note, Laura did catch a couple of typos on a date on the minutes and a couple of other things. They have been corrected online and on our iPads. Could I get a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Moved by Commissioner Schaefer, a second. Second for the minutes.
Second.
Commissioner Bray, thank you. We can do a roll call. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, any corrections to the agenda? Okay. We can jump right into commissioners' questions and comments. Any updates? We did not have a meeting in December, so it's been a bit of time since we've all been together. I know everyone's been pretty active since November, so who would like to go first? Commissioner Schaefer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, it has been a couple months. It's busy, I think, for everyone. For myself, I just wanted to highlight a few kind of cool things that I had the opportunity to partake in. One, I was down in Pueblo for some personal business, popped in at Lake Pueblo State Park unannounced just to see things, and staff was extremely gracious and having some conversations with me, but also invited me to the Volunteers Banquet that night. And that was great to be able to see 40, 50, 60 folks. I don't know how many folks were there, but the amount of hours, you know, dozens of folks, even in more than 500 hours of their volunteer time, a few folks over 1,000 hours. You start thinking about how critical volunteers are to the mission of this agency and Colorado's public lands. And it was just great to see. And so I really thank Park Manager Mullis and her staff for not just hosting me and being and gracious during that, but also really promulgating a great volunteer program. And I also wanted to mention the Habitat Partnership Program Conference. Myself, Commissioner Bray, and Commissioner Hauser were all there. Hearing from landowners and participants from the local committees and getting an idea of the scope and scale of the program and 30 years of success, it's a demonstration of why we're able to do what we're able to do, particularly in the Western Slope when it comes to having great relationships with landowners and being able to have those robust big game herds that we have. I think, you know, HPP is critical to that success. So I learned a lot, and it was great to be able to meet some new folks and see some old faces at the same time. And I'll also just mention that Director Prenslow and I had the fortune of, or misfortune, depending on what you think about it. You can blame myself or Dan. But we participated with Backcountry Hunters and Anglers doing a live podcast in Fort Collins a few weeks ago talking about wildlife corridors and crossings. We were obviously talking about the executive order and the work of the CPW, and as well as CDOT. I thought it was a fun time myself, and I've been told that it's out now and you can listen to it. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Schaefer. Any other commissioner comments? Commissioner Bray.
Yeah, thank you. I also, Luke did a great job of highlighting the HPP conference in Grand Junction. I just want to put a shout out to Pat Tucker and staff. Very good program, and it very well attended. The place was packed. It's one of the more premier programs. It's very well received and doesn't seem to conjure controversy like some other programs we have. It's a good program. It's up for reauthorization, and so hopefully we can get that redone. It does a lot of good job. I attended, just got back, as a matter of fact, and my fellow commissioners, I'm sure, will chime in from the Waffle Conference in Monterey. Once again, I appreciate the opportunity to go and represent our agency. I really enjoy meeting the commissioners from the other states. It's amazing the other agencies, our sister agencies around the West, the issues we have in common here are nearly, you know, there's regional differences. For example, the Dakotas, they have bird issues, and the coastal states have fishery issues that we wouldn't even imagine. But then there's everything else from elk recruitment and wolf interactions to everything across the board. And it is educational to learn. It's also educational to meet with the directors, state directors of the other agencies, and compare them to ours. And I think, quite frankly, we still got the best. We can still learn from some. So it's a great opportunity, and I encourage all members to attend when possible.
Commissioner Behill.
I just want to ask Commissioner Bray a question about elk recruitment. Is that happening in other states also? It's not just Colorado?
It just depends. In areas of Idaho, they have some issues. New Mexico has some issues in various areas. And they're trying to get a handle on what their reasoning is to. Predation and drought are always the two biggies, but there's others. CWD is a topic of concern amongst all the western states, and whether that's playing a factor, nobody really knows yet.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Bray, and thank you for taking the time to go to WAFA. It's incredibly important for us to be there. Commissioner Haskett.
Thank you. I also got to attend the HPP meeting, and it was great to be there. It was great to see all of our partners, and we've all worked together, and the seminars they put on were all great. I also went to WAFA for the first time, and I thought it was a great meeting to meet all the other commissioners from other states, but just to hear what's going on in their states and what they're doing and how it relates to us. And we all have a lot of similarities, which was interesting to hear how they take care of things. And I guess that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Haskett. Commissioner Adams.
Thank you. So I didn't get an opportunity to attend as many traditional events as possible over the last session, but I do have a couple of updates. One, I just wanted to take a moment to do a quick land acknowledgement to the Ute, Arapaho, and Cheyenne, whose land we are on right now, and I would request for our commission to revisit our protocols to include a land acknowledgement in every state or every area that we're in, especially with the huge wildfires that are happening in Australia right now, and reminding all of us of the importance of the indigenous community and that knowledge on stewardship, and especially here in the United States of America. So I wanted to take a moment to do that. But then I had we lost a hero, a legend in the African American outdoor community in December. Winston Kenneth Walker passed away. He's one of the co-founders of Beckworth Doers, which is one of the first African American outdoor organizations here in Colorado, founded in, I think, in the early 90s, and was really a mentor to many of us in the African American community. And so we actually were able to do a memorial walk for him in December, and it brought together the Beckworth Doers, Outdoor Afro, Vibe Tribe, a private guide, Girls Trek was also there. Again, I think just a reminder, when you hear that there is not sufficient representation in the outdoors, know that we have been there. We have a strong history there, and I think it's very important that we remember that it's a reclaiming of our space. It is not a invitation to a new space. So again, just wanted to take a moment to honor his memory and the legacy that he has across the state and across the country. So that's one update. And then briefly, I wanted to talk about a resource that has been reverberating across my organization that I work with, called the American Institutes for Research, one of the leading organizations or research organizations in the country. And we are very steeped in this justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion work as well. And so one resource that we have found to be particularly compelling has been the Why Am I Always Being Research, a guidebook for community organizations, researchers, and funders. And you'll see there in that circle, it talks about seven inequities. So one thing that I am very focused on is making sure that we are defining terms and not just slapping the term equity on something. And so you'll see here seven dimensions of equity that I think are really interesting to consider. Our access, obviously, I feel like that's the one that people tend to default to, but it's also inequities in access to information, the validity process. So how are we defining what an expert means? You know, having had the opportunity to talk with ranchers and farmers across the state in these meetings, I see that there are experts, even though they may not have the master's degree or certificates or credentials. Their experience in the field is valid and needs to be included in any decision making that we're that we are conducting. Ownership is another component, so that collective ownership and authorship. Value, I think we do a really great job in this agency of identifying shared values and moving and making value-based decisions. Accountability, again, I think we are very strong in the accountability front as well, but the question becomes, who are we accountable to? So as I want to take a moment to commend the folks in our budget department for updating the budget information on the website so that it is more transparent, and we continue to thrive for more transparency so the public can hold us accountable. And then lastly, that authorship, which I mentioned before. So thank you again for all of the hard work that CPW staff, commissioners, and our partners are doing to increase and address these issues around justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Adams. Appreciate. I will definitely take note. I like that idea of making sure we recognize the lands we're on as well. Appreciate that. Commissioner Garcia. And Commissioner Garcia and then Commissioner Vigil.
So I will begin by apologizing. I haven't done anything since our last meeting. I went on vacation. And so
wait a minute. You added a member.
I thought I would start off 2020 with being on a little lighter side. I'm going to present how I spent my summer vacation. So I spent the entire month of December in this little place called New Zealand. That little thing in the background, that's my wife and I, and the background is we call that New Zealand Uber. It's a lot easier to get around in one of those little choppers than the typical taxi cab. Next slide, please. This is my wife with a little rainbow from New Zealand. She does the fishing. I land the fish. I'm really good at landing them. I landed this fish myself. Next slide, please. This is sort of the view from the Uber that you're used to as you travel around on your summer vacation. And so that's sort of how I spent the month of December. And I'm glad to be back. And I think the next slide will tell you what I'm doing now. This is what I came home to. This is my project for 2020, and I want everybody to know that this little golden retriever will be at our meeting in November for our annual pheasant hunt. And anybody that would like to hunt over her, just let me know, because she's going to be a great one. So that's how I spent my summer vacation and how I plan on spending most of 2020, in addition to doing some work for CPW. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Garcia. I think that that puppy should be at every meeting, just FYI, I think, maybe. I don't know if anyone recalls, but we did actually host the New Zealand delegate. Where's Katie? Might be able to help me better there. That was August or September. They were here, and we had a joint meeting, Colorado Parks and Wildlife. It was just a few staff. It was the same day that the governor signed the Crazy French Ranch, so I think most eyes were on that, but the New Zealand folks certainly have some parks and wildlife issues that are in some cases very similar and in some cases very different, so that was telling, but glad to see the rainbows are certainly no bigger than what we have here.
I can tell you I did wear my parks and wildlife vest everywhere I went in New Zealand, and it did draw quite a bit of conversation.
Oh, that's interesting. Great. Commissioner Vigil.
Yeah, the Ubers I was used to in Vietnam are little motor scooters that that do not follow traffic signs, because they're exempt from traffic signals. Cars have to stop, and trucks. Those few that do, because that's one driver explained driving in Vietnam. You look to your left, you look to in front of you, you look to your right, you look behind you, and after you've done all that, then you might look at a traffic signal. And that's really the way it is. But get back to business. On the 7th of January, I attended the Southeast Region's Sportsman's Caucus. And it's the largest attendance I've ever seen. I think it was because of change in regional managers or something, because it was a packed room. It was pretty amazing. And one of the things that I came away with was concerns raised by some ranchers on state trust lands that are in big parcels, like the Brett Gray as an example that was talked about. There's some potential conflicts that are going to exist between dual leases, us as hunting and fishing access, and the ranchers and farmers that also have leases there, and some of them actually have roads on those leases. And I there was one landowner that brought it up, but after the session broke up, all the ranchers got together, and I know they were talking about that issue. So I just want to make sure that we're in front of that potential, those potential conflicts that, that might exist. And we really watch for that, because something like the Brett Gray, I don't know how many acres it is, but it's a huge parcel. And there's a lot of roads into that, and but not all those roads. Some are county roads, some are private roads. So the access is going to be an issue. So we're going to have to do some education, some signage, I'm sure, building some parking lots, et cetera. So I just want staff to be in front of that issue. Also, I attended the Capital Development Committee tomorrow, and I'll let staff go ahead and talk about it. It was really a successful meeting.
Yesterday morning at 7:30.
Oh. Well, it...
In Vietnam, it is tomorrow.
Sorry, because the time change is still affecting me.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Vigil. Commissioner Hauser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also was able to attend, and I'm going to actually say it out because the first time I heard this, I didn't know what the acronym stood for, the Western Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies conference in Monterey. And I would just add, thanks. It was great to be with Commissioners Bray, Haskett, and McDaniel, who I think is having his knee replaced today. He made sure to fit in some time in Monterey first. Anyway, it was also great to be with several members of the staff and just have the time to really talk about various different issues. You don't get that very often. I would also say that appropriately, Commissioner Bray was celebrated. He had been attending this meeting and has been very involved with the association for many years. So he and a few other outgoing commissioners from the other states were appropriately acknowledged. So just, he probably wouldn't tell you that himself. So, and I would just say my couple of takeaways. This was a very helpful conference for me last year, so it was I was appreciative to be able to go again. Similar to Commissioner Bray's comments, certainly our sort of western states wrestle with a lot of the same issues. There are some certainly unique ones, orcas and turtles, sea turtles and other things that I think we all sit there and go, wow, that's pretty cool. But the other thing that's sort of a, you know, no-brainer aha, but I think is really illustrated in the conversations that we have with the other states is in wildlife management, these western states all have so many different rules, but wildlife don't pay attention to them. So when you have the ability to manage, for example, wolves in Idaho, but not in other states based on protections or otherwise, it makes for some really complicated relationships among the states. And I think it's a real testament to the association to bring the western states together so that we can think about some of these issues collectively. The other big takeaway that I had was sort of how WAFWA and our commissioners, particularly that have some political muscle, can do a better job with the public relations around some of these issues that the states are dealing with. Agencies sometimes or staff are a little bit more handcuffed when it comes to some of these public issues, ballot issues, and otherwise, and how can these commissions kind of come together and help educate the public with some of the matters that we're all wrestling with. So those are some of the things that I would say were certainly the most helpful, at least for me, to attend. My other little comment that I shared with Director Prenzel this morning that I know Colorado did first day hikes all over the state in the state parks. I happen to be in Florida and joined a first day hike on Little Talbot Island. And again, so different than our state parks here, but I will tell you, I visited with the rangers that conducted this hike, and Colorado is considered truly the pinnacle of opportunity for Parks and Wildlife staff out there. They certainly deal with many different issues, clearly ticks and snakes and things that we don't ever think about in their state parks. But one of the rangers that I visited with was getting his master's degree in wildlife management, and this is where he wants to be. And so anybody that's really wanting to be in the West and wanting to be in a true gem of a state park system, Colorado clearly is it. So watch out. They're coming. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hauser. Commissioner Blecka.
Hi. I just want to give a shout out to the our magazine, the Colorado Outdoors magazine. The latest issue has the photography one in the centerfold. Is that bloody mule deer, which I use as a target on Christmas Day when my kids cut their archery sets, like from the dollar store. So, but it was way better than the dinosaurs we had set up. It was like, and it's still up. So thank you for doing that, which makes me kind of think that we should be getting this literature into our school systems, like into the libraries, even if they're outdated back editions. I think kids are still into that, and it's some good exposure. And then to dovetail onto that, when I was getting new tires yesterday, I was looking through different hunting magazines. This doesn't really appeal to or pertain to our agency, but I noticed that there is a lot of tobacco and sex-based advertising in these things. And I think as an industry overall, we could do better with advertising. So I have an idea, like we could be engaging children in different ways, but I wouldn't be comfortable putting those publications into, say, the school library because of that, and maybe there's room for improvement. Well, there is room for improvement on that, and those are my points. Thank you.
Thank you. Good points. Anyone else? Okay, I'll add up some of my comments. There's been some information, of course, over the last couple of months sent out by Laura. Thank you. One of them, of course, is the CSU Wildlife Management Short Course in the end of March. I know quite a few folks have gone to that. I know that that is something that we're doing again. I think staff is also working at doing some work to be able to have it. It's tough to carve out 5 days to go to that. It is very helpful, and it's incredibly important, but it's tough to carve out 5 days to really do anything. So I know we're working on trying to see if we can do something that's shorter, but if you can take a look at that, it should be in your email from probably a month ago now. Commissioner Garcia.
Yeah, and if anybody is interested, Marie and I attended last year, and we loved it. We had a great time. So if anybody wants to talk to us about it, be happy to.
Great. And you can follow up with Laura for more information on it, too. I know that email, I think, was forwarded from Laura. A couple other things, of course. We are back in session, if anyone didn't notice. there's quite a few wildlife-related things happening at the Capitol. There's the Sportsman Caucus, there's the CLAW meetings, which I can't remember what CLAW stands for right off the top of my head, but I think those meetings have been added to your commissioner calendar, and I know that Laura just did send out a link to that commissioner calendar again. So if you find yourself near the Capitol, there are some opportunities to get involved there during the session. So, Commissioner Garcia.
Two of those fall during our meetings, the Legislative Caucus, and maybe next year we can take a look at that and see if somehow we can fix that problem.
Yeah, I noticed that as well. I think there's one in February. Of course,
yeah,
we don't have
February. And one falls during GOCO's meetings. So, I mean, it's out of four meetings, yep. I'm able to make one. So,
fortunately, we're not at a loss for things to do. So, but wanted to at least bring those to attention and the commissioner calendar as well. Just a little bit of a look ahead for the March forum or for the March meeting. We are going to do another forum on the second day. If you recall, we've done a couple of those over the course of the past year when Chairman Howard was pulling those together. So we'll talk a little more about that, and we are putting all the pieces together. So we'll talk a little more about that, I think, tomorrow. We are also going to do that meeting in March is going to be in Aurora, and we are going to do a community dinner there as well. So, again, we can talk. I think I actually have 10 minutes on the agenda to talk about that for tomorrow. Couple other notes. We may or may not need an April meeting. If you recall, we're kind of holding that April 30th day right after the Partners in the Outdoors Conference as a potential half day or day meeting if as needed. I know people's calendars fill up, so we will try to figure out whether we need that meeting and let you know as soon as possible, hopefully here before the end of the month. Two other points, strategic plan update. So it's been a while since we did our strategic plan a while ago. It's a long plan, and I just wanted to, I spoke with staff, and I understand the next steps, but I just wanted everyone else on the commission to understand the next steps with regard to our strategic plan. So the next phase of our strategic plan is the operational plan. So taking all the things that we decided were our major goals and then putting an operational plan around them, putting the meat on the bones of the plan. So staff is drafting that now, January. Leadership team will review it in February. That operational plan will be presented to the commission at the March meeting. And then the leadership team does their budget retreat in the end of March. That plan is released in April, and then DNR sees it in May, so that they can incorporate it into their budget as well. So, do I have that correct? Okay. Katie and Jeff can correct me there if I messed that up, but that's just the general outline. So we will be hearing an update on the strategic plan and the operational plan in March. Last piece is in April, April 21st through 23rd, is the Rocky Mountain State Parks Executive Conference. That's typically a conference for Westwide Parks State Parks agencies, and it's typically for staff to get together. But we do have an opportunity to send two commissioners. It's in Anchorage, Alaska in April. I have to say I just spent a week in Anchorage the week before Christmas. April's a much better time. It's real dark. I wouldn't recommend going the week before Christmas. But yeah, if anyone would like to go, it gives a chance to interact with park staff. You get to tour several of the state parks, which in Alaska I think would be pretty phenomenal. So I guess let me or Director Prenzlow know, and we can coordinate with Margaret and figure out who would like to take that time. Again, it's the March 21st through 23rd, and it's called the Rocky Mountain State Parks Executive Conference, if you want to look at that. Those are my comments. Anyone else? Commissioner Haskett.
I just want to add one thing. I want to give a shout out to staff for updating the wall out there. For the years that I've been here, I always wondered why it ended, and all the commissioners and directors were not on there, and it's nice to see that it's been updated. Thank you.
Looking good, a little spruced up. Okay, let's move on to Department of Natural Resources update. Director Gibbs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I thought it'd be fun to, last week, actually, Commissioner Greenberg and I celebrated our one-year anniversary in terms of, you know, being appointed by the governor in our capacities. And I just wrote down a few notes I want to share with folks. Some of the highlights I thought were pretty exciting to work on. You know, Department of Natural Resources, you know, CPW is just one of the divisions, but we've done a lot over this past year. And, you know, just rattle off a list of some, I think, some key, you know, really exciting accomplishments. You know, first of all, you know, Fisher's Peak, you know, the announcement. Commissioner Vigil, thank you for being there in the committee yesterday, too. But so exciting to have the governor really, you know, encourage us to say, hey, let's get this done. Let's all work together. Let's explore. This is the perfect location, perfect time. And let's create a new state park, our 42nd. Senate Bill 181, that's the bill that looked at, you know, major reform on oil and gas. We are very busy in the rulemaking process with implementing that. And by July 1st of 2020, we have to be done with our initial Big Four rulemaking sessions and have the professional commission all appointed. It's going to be similarly modeled after the Public Utilities Commission, where those commissioners will get paid a pretty good salary, actually, to serve in that capacity for the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. Water Conservation Board had a big year. You know, they released the technical update to the State Water Supply Initiative, and they're working towards updating the Colorado Water Plan, which is so important as we look at the water needs of both additional storage and conservation moving forward in Colorado. Our Division of Reclamation, Mining, and Safety recognized that actually even before the announcement of Tri-State on the announcement of the closures of some of the coal mines, that they decided to merge the coal and hard rock programs, really looking at the signs and really adapting to changing environments. We signed a shared stewardship MOU with the U.S. Forest Service, really highlighting how we're going to work closely with the U.S. Forest Service, whether it's on diversity in the outdoors and whether it's looking at parking issues, looking at forest health issues, looking at wildfire preparedness, all those things that we work closely with the U.S. Forest Service on. is really important. Just yesterday, we signed the updated BLM, U.S. Forest Service, Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, MOU, that really spells out how we work together when it comes to oil and gas issues. Governor signed a Wildlife Corridors executive order, and I know CPW is working hard on looking at the mapping components of that, but that's exciting to have that move forward too. State Land Board brought in $178 million for K-12 education this past year, really big for Colorado, especially for our schools. They also work closely with Parks and Wildlife to expand the public access program so we can look for these opportunities to get more people outdoors and in new areas. And also the DNR has really been involved with a lot of crisis issues over this past year. I'll just rattle off maybe one or two, but many of you recall the amount of avalanches that we had in the Lake City area this past winter, where we had Division of Water Conservation Board, you know, working with their flood recovery unit. We had Division of Water Resources, and we have a dam safety unit part of that. And then, of course, Colorado Avalanche Information Center, providing the best available information to folks, you know, locally there on avalanche probability. And, of course, you know, Parks and Wildlife, you guys were so involved. You're always dealing with crisis management, frankly. But just thinking of around this time last year, some of those bomb cyclones, I know that many of the staff were out there really assisting people on the challenging situations that they faced with traveling during that time. So those are just a few, you know, big picture highlights. We're really happy. There's a lot of challenges and opportunities moving forward, but I just want to share some of those with you. Also, you know, every agency has WIGs, these wildly important goals, and our just want to remind you of the DNR's WIGs, and we're moving forward, and everything is on track with those. But number one is to implement Senate Bill 181, and that's the oil and gas rules and regulations. Number two is to increase public access, and that's to increase acres of public access, easements, leases, and other agreements from 1.4 million acres to 2.2 million acres. WIG 3 is dealing with Parks and Wildlife financial sustainability, and so we're in the midst of conducting a study, contract with a company, a Denver-based company, to study. We're looking at the baseline of outdoors familiarity with Parks and Wildlife and develop a plan to engage specific groups to increase sustainable revenue sources for Parks and Wildlife by June 30th, 2020. And then last WIG, but definitely not least, is our equity, diversity, and inclusion WIG. And how that our lead measure looks is to incorporate EDI values as part of our DNR culture and core business practices by implementing relevant guidance and policy, increasing the percentage of job applicants meeting minimum qualifications from 40% to 60% by June 30th, 2020. All these WIGs, you can see it on the governor's, you know, on the state website. You can look at the dashboard. These are measurables that we have to okay once a month, and so you can see, you know, how well that's going. Some of the staff changes since our last meeting, why is this moving, in November. Some of you know I promoted Doug Vilsack. He's in the kind of the middle of the road here, to our assistant director on wildlife, lands, and parks, and as a result of that, we have an opening for our legislative liaison, so we selected Alice Cosgrove. Alice had been working previously for the COGCC, and she's really, Doug, she's on the job for, what, about 2.5 weeks now, and I think she's doing a good job and really doing some great outreach, getting to know, you know, the legislators, and Doug's been doing a great job to really, you know, help her out along the way, too, because it's a different atmosphere at the Capitol, to say the least. We also hired two policy analysts, Vanessa Mezel. She's going to be our federal coordinator. As you can imagine, it is just constant dealing with BLM, U.S. Forest Service, Bureau of Reclamation, keeping track of all the different avenues that we are weighing in from the state of Colorado, whether it's travel management plans or, you know, huge RMPs for the Uncompahgre Resource Management Plan, you know, you name it, it's extensive. So we're excited to have her on board. We also hired Angela Bogue. She's going to be a policy analyst, really focused on climate change and forestry, in any other issues that we give her, really. She has her PhD in climate change, so she's going to be helping us look through a lens of everything we do with the Department of Natural Resources to look through that lens of climate change. Middle of December, we made it through our GBC hearing. I think that went quite well. And then just last week, we had our SMART hearings. That's where we present to the committee a reference for the majority of the Department of Natural Resources. And I think that went quite well. Director Prinzel, thanks for doing a great job of that. There are definitely a lot of questions that pertain to CPW. And then our last SMART hearing is for oil and gas, and that will be tomorrow. So unfortunately, I'll miss you all tomorrow, but I'll be here all day today. And let's see, what else do I have here? I wanted to share with you all, the DNR has been involved with a pretty unique partnership with the U.S. Forest Service and the National Wild Turkey Federation on an effort called the Rocky Mountain Restoration Initiative. And this is really bringing in, you know, governments and nonprofits to figure out how we can look at large-scale restoration of our forests. There was a meeting more or less right before Christmas, and there were six presentations on areas around the state of Colorado. We selected the Southwest region, so it's pretty much all the southwest corner of Colorado. It's about a 300,000-acre project, and we are still working on the nuts and bolts of it, but I think it's exciting when you combine nonprofits, government, state, federal. We can do a lot, you know, on the forest health front. I would say from my experience, everything's been really focused on fire mitigation for years, so we want to get past the mitigation world and really move towards what our forests really need and not just look through a lens of wildfire preparedness. And then last but not least, I did mention Fisher's Peak, but you know, sometimes at the Capitol, every bill has a fair hearing. Every bill, House or Senate bill, you know, gets a number. But there is significance in terms of what number that bill gets. And I just want to let you know that Senate Bill 3 is the I Love Colorado State Parks Act, the Fisher's Peak bill. So it is significant. That is Senate Bill 3, and I think that's easy to remember, to say the least, but it shows the importance that the Senate President really has in that bill, making it more or less his top three most important bills of the legislative session. So I think that's about it. I'm happy to answer any questions, and as I mentioned, I'm here all day, so I'm happy to have any, you know, side conversations as well with the commissioners or obviously folks that are here too. Thanks.
Great. Any questions for Director Gibbs? Commissioner Adams.
Not so much a question, just appreciation for your leadership around these diversity, equity, and inclusion issues. I have met with many nonprofit organizations, both in the education and environmental space, both here in Colorado and across the country, and this is an issue that's really resonating. And so on the environmental side of the house, though, constantly referencing this initiative by DNR, and really in lieu of having every subgroup come up with their own definitions, and then we just have a whole lot of noise, really trying to create a broader net when it comes to how we want to define these issues for ourselves as a state, and looking to DNR's leadership in those matters. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Move on to Department of Agriculture update. Director Greenberg, thank you for being here.
All right, thank you. It's good to see everyone. Happy New Year. I hope you all ate well over the holidays. Remember that all our food comes from farmers and ranchers, and I always like to remind us that we're all connected to ag, no matter if you're here on the Front Range or all across the state. So we've been also reflecting on 2019. It's been a big year, I think, for a lot of us. And a lot going on across the board. We had a lot of successes last year. We like to celebrate across our eight divisions that really included all of our 300 staff at the department, both here. You know, we're headquartered in Broomfield, but most of our staff is actually out in the field, whether Palisade, Western Slope, down in Monta Vista, Pueblo, Of course, we had the state fair last year, among other things going on every day. So, you know, a lot of my updates on looking back, really thinking about our big initiatives, our WIGs, if you will. You know, we have three or kind of four areas that we've really been focusing on. And, you know, I'd like to put these in the context of the challenges that our producers out in the field are facing. So, you know, our mission statement, the first line in our mission is to advance Colorado agriculture. And so we, you know, we really see ourselves as in service to agriculture across the state. So when our farmers and ranchers are feeling pain, we feel that same pain. And so we've been, you know, out in the field making sure folks know we're here and have their backs. And a lot of the issues going on in ag right now and the ag economy are hitting farmers' bottom lines. You know, we're seeing increasing foreclosures, financial stress across the industry. Of course, trade has been troublesome for a lot of our producers in Colorado, uncertainty in the marketplace, both at home and abroad, as we're working to build not only our international markets but also our local food system here and really connect our Colorado producers to buyers. Folks are always struggling to find those markets, and what's going on internationally has not helped, but producers, of course, stick it out. So, you know, where we think we can play a role is connecting, continuing to connect Colorado producers to business opportunities, looking for high-value ag. We've, of course, been, everybody's been hands on deck for hemp. That's a big part of our universe now at the department. And we've pulled together what we call the CHAMP Initiative, Colorado Hemp Advancement and Management Plan, to coordinate across about a 10 or so of our state agencies. Both tribes are involved, institutions of higher education, had about 200 stakeholders involved throughout this past year looking at what does the future of hemp in Colorado look like. Big thinking here. We are in the midst of submitting our state plan to the USDA, commenting on interim final rules, and then throughout this spring we'll be developing a blueprint for the future of hemp across the state, both for regulating hemp and also advancing the industry. For those of you who follow it, I know it's a little tangential to the core mission of CPW, but it being a big issue in ag right now, 2019 was a big shakeout year, I would say. A lot of folks got in, and I'm guessing a lot of those folks are not going to be in the hemp business next year necessarily. A lot of big investment and not necessarily the outcome that a lot of folks were expecting. So we're continuing to do a lot of work on that front. But in addition, just looking for business opportunities for our producers. Last night we hosted an international gathering with Canada and Mexico at the Stock Show, something we do every year. We do bring international buyers here to Colorado to meet with our producers directly. We get them out on farms and ranches and, you know, sell them on our sunshine and our high mountains and clean water and do a lot of business deals for our folks. We also celebrated the 20th anniversary of Colorado Proud. So that brand, hopefully you all have seen our new logo. It's starting to get on packaging all over the state. But we've got about 2,800 Colorado Proud members. So those, you know, ag producers and businesses who leverage the reputation our team has built over the last two decades to really stand up our Colorado brand, something we're really excited to build off of, to give for, you know, at free of cost to our producers who see their premium gained on accessing that brand. So a lot going on the local food system side as well as we build those connections. Doing a lot to support the next generation of farmers and ranchers. You know, this, I was just actually at the wool growers meeting this morning. I was a little late getting here. But we talked a lot about this, about how do we expect to get more young people into a business that is stacked with challenges left and right, whether it be weather or markets or predation or the cost of doing business. There's all kinds of things that our producers are facing, and of course we're not looking to convince young people that it's going to be easy. We're just looking to remove barriers that young people face wherever we can, especially young people who know what they're stepping into and are ready to get into the business. So we've been supporting farm families and developing succession plans in order to keep their land and business and agriculture. We also operated our first, had our first year of grant making for our Ag Workforce Development Program that that actually is a cost share program for young people in paid apprenticeships on farms and ranches in Colorado. So we had about 20 apprentices out in the field this year. And we're also expanding our thinking about next gen in ag to our labs. And so we've been working with Denver Public Schools and are actually working through a number of other projects right now targeting. Our latest effort is working with CSU Pueblo to reach out to Hispanic youth primarily to come visit our labs and think about careers in ag research. And so our lab team has really been instrumental in helping us expand our next generation work. So there's really work that's going on across the department. Our work on conservation has been big. It's been front and center for us this year and a big intersection with all your work at CPW and DNR. Of course, public lands. We do a lot on public lands with our 1.5 people that we have to do our federal lands work. So it's been really important for us to have a strong partnership with you all at CPW and at DNR. So Dan Gibbs, thank you for you and your team and all of the partnership and the collaboration that we've had this year. There will be a lot more to come as we work on all the issues that you mentioned in your report and more. The way we've been framing our conservation stewardship efforts is around soil, water, and climate stewardship. We believe farmers and ranchers are at the forefront of conservation, and we want to tell that story and support farmer and rancher-led conservation. So our big deal over the past few months, and that will continue into this year, is around a soil health initiative. We've been convening stakeholders for the last many months, asking what role the department can and should play in advancing soil health across the state. This is something that we've heard from producers of all types, small, big, irrigated, dry land, west slope, east slope, what have you, that, of course, soil health, as long as you're operating a soil-based operation, is essential to agriculture, of course. It is foundational, but it also has co-benefits that I think us as a state can benefit from when producers have support in investing in healthy soil. So what we're looking at is developing a voluntary, incentive-based, farmer-led initiative that will allow producers to take a little bit more risk, to try new practices, invest in soil, and that could be simply to cut down cost of external inputs on the farm to gain greater nutrient availability in the soil, increase water holding capacity in the soil. It could be for carbon capture. This is something we're really thinking about, as how can we, you know, most producers have multiple cash crops and they're not always food. So energy development is one of those, but we're also looking at what is the future of payments for ecosystem services and how can we make sure our producers are set up to take advantage of those income streams. So that's kind of where our thinking is at, though, at the very outset of developing what this program might look like. On the renewable side, we continue to support our producers who want to invest in renewable development and energy efficiency through our Acre 3 program. This is actually one of our budget requests in addition to our soil health request that we have in this year. So we want to keep being able to draw in those federal dollars that offer the cost share to that renewable program. And this is something we're doing all over the state, whether it's micro hydro, solar, wind, methane recapture, LED light bulbs. We're supporting our ag community in saving on costs, primarily on utilities. That's a big one, but then also being part of renewable generation for the state and helping us meet the governor's ambitious goals around renewables and climate mitigation. Just a few more updates. There's so much to talk about, but last year, for those of you with livestock or with horses in particular, you'll know that we had a big vesicular stomatitis virus outbreak. This was a big deal for us. VSV is endemic. It sort of sits dormant in the environment, and then climatic conditions will allow it to emerge, and it emerged with a vengeance this past year. We had about just under 700 quarantines, equine quarantines, from July through December. That was straight through fair season. So if you think about how many livestock and animals are moving in and out of state or across the state to go to county fairs, to go down to Pueblo for the state fair, if you think about the fire that we had, I'm forgetting the name right now, but it didn't last too long, but it was right on the Front Range, right in sort of a wooey area. We had to move about 100 horses out of the fire zone, stacked on top of VSV quarantines. So I just want to give a huge shout out to our animal health team, who's managing incredibly complex disease outbreaks, sometimes on top of natural disasters, sometimes also on top of fair time when exposure risk is incredibly high. So we're doing all these exciting initiatives, and at the same time, underneath all that, we're keeping the gears turning, keeping consumers safe through so many of our programs, working on a lot of stewardship, environmental issues, and these livestock disease issues as well. Just like Direct Gives, we've been moving through our schedules downtown with our JVC hearing and our Smart Act hearing. Really positive there. Excited to build relationships with new members downtown and strengthen our existing ones and make sure everybody knows how foundational agriculture is to all of us, especially for those who haven't had a chance to get out in the field. So looking to continue getting out in the field as much as possible, being a voice for ag and really telling our story across the state. And I think that's all I have for today. So thank you all so much.
Thank you, Director Greenberg. Lots going on in the Department of Ag, and as always, I want to just underscore our partnership. CPW and Department of Ag is incredibly important. We do a lot together, and I want to thank our ag commissioners, our ag-specific commissioners, V. Hillbray and Barty. I know you guys work together a lot as well, so thanks so much for all you do. Commissioner Garcia.
Thank you for all the conservation work, particularly the water conservation work that you're doing, but what's really important to me is, when is Ag Day at the Capitol? That's where the good food is, folks.
Let me look that up real quick, and then I will make a big announcement, because that is a big day. You're right.
Yeah. Perfect. Director Prenzler.
I might suggest that the wild hot dogs that are provided on Sportsman's Day might rival, hay, but just saying.
It's going to be another, what was the Hatch chili versus the Colorado chili? It's going to be another knock 'em down, drag out competition there. All right, thank you. Director Prenzlow, our director's comments.
Great, thank you, Madam Chair. Unfortunately for all of us, I have a fair amount of updates. I'll read some, but I do look out. I want to recognize ex-Division of Wildlife Commissioner Brad Phelps is in the audience, so I suspect we'll hear from Brad later, but nice to see your face. I hear there's a couple of ex-commissioners, Crawford and Enstrom, are going to pop in at 10 o'clock, so I don't know if there's a party happening, but I invite them to lunch. So I would invite Brad to lunch if he'd like to stay. Thanks for your audience and all your past work, Brad. There's lots of acronyms getting flown around, JBC and CDC and SMART Act, et cetera, but I'd like to talk just really briefly about the CDC, which is the Capital Development Committee. Staff, Doug Vilsack, Justin Rutter, Margaret Taylor, et cetera, myself, all had our hearing on Fisher's Peak, and we passed out of that committee 5-1. Like to have had unanimous, but we didn't quite get that. But thanks to Executive Director Gibbs, we came out with 5-1. So that was specific on Fisher's Peak. I think we have another hearing a week from now I think JBC, or the finances on that, but we're progressing forward, so we're real happy about that. Maybe shameless or not, but I will, as Executive Director Gibbs talked about a year, I've been working for Dan and with DNR for about 6 months. It's been a pleasure to work for and with him, with Doug, with your team, Tim, Vanessa, et cetera, so it's been a real pleasure. I appreciate the backup and the push sometimes, and I just like to tell you that. Thanks. We have done a lot, so no time to rest on our laurels, though. A couple more updates. I would like to give you an update on there were two citizen petitions that came in a few weeks ago. One was to ban contest killing and one to ban trapping, including the use of box traps. You may recall that we notified the commission of these petitions on December 4th. But first, some background. On November 14th of 19, at its meeting in Ray, the commission requested division staff to analyze whether or how other states regulate contest killing. Katie Lantor will report on those findings here today, agenda item 20. That information is also in your packet. On November 22nd, the division received the two citizen petitions at issue discussed. On December 10th, the division provided a status update to the petitioners. With respect to the contest hunting ban petition, the division informed the petitioners that the petition would not be heard prior to the commission meeting in March 2020, and that the commission had previously requested the division analyze other states' regulations, if any, concerning contest killing. With respect to the trapping ban petition, the division informed the petitioners that the petition did not meet the requirements of W-16, the policy on petitions. Namely, the petition did not identify any commission regulations sought to amend or provide a red line of the desired change. Due to this lack of clarity, the division would not properly notice the trapping ban for rulemaking. The division informed the petitioners of their ability to file an amended trapping ban petition identifying the regulations they wish to amend. To date, the division has not received an amended trapping ban petition. We will alert you if that occurs. Next steps, unless an amended trapping ban petition is filed, there is no further action needed. With respect to the contest hunting ban petition, I ask that you provide some guidance to staff today in our item number 20. The commission is inclined to initiate rulemaking on contest hunting. The citizen petition should be heard at the time rulemaking is initiated, which might be March. So you can take that up at then. So that's a very long-winded answer, just to give you an update on that. Chronic waste and disease update, we're going to plan on a lot more information at your March meeting, but we have been busy since hunting season started with a mandatory surveillance, and we really concentrate on the Eastern Plains this year to try and get a baseline of our prevalence of chronic waste and disease. Staff has worked very, very hard in that. I would, and so have our sportsmen and women who absolutely have to go out of their way to help us with that data. So I want to give a shout out to them. We've taken over 7,400 samples submitted statewide for mandatory. There's at least 23 new game management units where CWD has been detected. When you drill down at that doesn't mean there's 23 units that just got it. That's just that were actually detected because we're now looking hard statewide. 18 of the 54 deer DAUs are over the 5% management threshold, and 13 of the 54 DAUs for deer are over the 10%. So we're at about two-thirds of the 55 deer DAUs that have some prevalence of chronic waste and disease. So as you all know, we worked on that issue and a policy for this agency a year or so ago, and so we have lots more work to do on that. Colorado Outdoor Regional Partnership, called the Co-op, CPW and DNR developing. We're working on a statewide initiative to coordinate, support, and build community efforts dedicated to sustaining our outdoor recreation and conservation on the landscape. With Colorado is a national leader in this, but really no state in the West has figured out how to get ahead of the sometimes collaboration and sometimes the collision of wildlife management and recreation, or the just space on the landscape. And so we're going to try and take a run at figuring out how Colorado can be out ahead of this issue. So there already is a statewide group called that co-op, and it's kind of, I would say, who's who. Mr. Gibbs is on there. I might be on there. Terry Fankhauser's on there. Nathan Fay is on there. I'll introduce him in a bit. Nature Conservancy's on there. You know, Dan Gates is on there for sports person. So, we're looking at creating a regional based partnership. That's a statewide group, so we can actually work at the local level and create that structure. We are just at the initial stages of that, but my assessment in Colorado, not just mine, is if we don't get out ahead of this, I think we're already behind, but if we don't get out ahead of this conversation and structure were never going to get caught up. Each community around, not each community, there's a fair amount of communities around the state that have already have the NOCO places. There's a group in Gunnison, there's a group in Routt County, and this is all related to this issue about where should we plan on recreation, where should we preserve or protect wildlife habitat, or where is it okay to have both of those on the same footprint. And so my goal, and I know Director Gibbs' goal and the governor's goal, is to try and see if we can plan. You pay us to be out ahead of these problems, not reactive only in this. And so that is the plan of this. So I'll send you some information on there as we work on that, but it's a moving target, but it's moving quickly to try and get out ahead of this issue. Let's see, unless you've been under a rock, you might notice that Colorado is the owner of a wolf pack, at least at times in Colorado, so we are monitoring that. We did take scat samples that were around fed upon carcasses, and I think we'll actually get a result back from the lab DNA test on that to see, confirm or not confirm whether those were wolves on the landscape. I did send the commission and staff out a note before the papers started telling us what we know or don't know, and lots of opinions out there. So stay tuned. We won't be boring. I think I'll leave it at that. Director Gibbs talked about WIG, so I won't spend much time on that. Dan covered the one. The one I would like to cover just really briefly on the access WIG. So I think you said 1.7 million acres, but what that means to us is another 200,000 acres by September of 2020, just in this next coming year for the land board access program. So that it's much broader than that, but I just wanted to put a number to that. The Southeast region led 100,000 last year. We'll do 200,000 again this year with the cooperation of our sister agency, the State Land Board. So WAFCA was discovered, Western Association of Fish and Wildlife Service Agencies in Monterey. The reason I'll bring that up, there's a lot of Chairman Zimmerman brought up the Rocky Mountain Executive Committee, and commissioners can go. The distinction with WAFWA, though, is it's really only there's an AFWA, there's a North American, but the WAFWA is well known because the commissioners have their own standing meetings. They're talking about policy around the state as staff is working, and it really is a pretty effective model because there are two different kinds of conversations, and then they come together and discuss those. So WAFWA, which one of its thriving successes is because of that commissioner involvement. So I just wanted to pass that. There's lots of, we could go to a lot of organizations and talk amongst ourselves, but WAFWA is unique in that regard, or at least special, I guess. Let's see. Thanks to Commissioner Haskett for recognizing her picture on the wall, and put on your Sunday duds, because I think sometime today or tomorrow, Lauren's staff is planning on a, if you don't like your picture on the wall, you get a chance to improve. So you get a choice. So we want to make sure. So if you like it, you can just, you can ignore that part. I will just transition. I know I want to personally thank Nathan Fay. He's the director of Colorado Outdoor Rec Industry Office. He's here. I saw him wandering around. He's next on the agenda. I just want to personally say thank you for Nathan for taking his time today, and we have him for a few minutes. So with that, I'll end my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Penzo. One thing you commented on, and I just want to highlight and say how much we appreciate it. It's something that we've heard about for years, and certainly recently when the governor came to speak with us this time last year, I think at this meeting last year, he commented on it. He commented on it again in his State of the State last Thursday. The idea of, I think the governor puts it as the recreation potentially loving the lands to death idea, but I know it's something we've been hearing from quiet use recreation folks and conservation groups and sportsman groups and all sorts of folks about recreation impacts to wildlife and how do we manage this dual mission that we have. So I'm, of course, thrilled. It's something that we wake up every single day, every person in this room, and I know every person on the staff of the division wakes up every day to work on this mission. So I know it's something that we're doing in every action we do, but I'm glad to hear that Colorado is even taking a step of what aren't we doing? What can we do better? How can we take the lead? So thank you to Director Gibbs as well, to the DNR, and really look forward to hearing more, getting an update, as you mentioned, from the co-op. So thank you. Any questions for Director Prenzlow? Okay, well, as he mentioned, we are honored, very happy to welcome Nathan Fay, our director, new director. Great pick, I will say, from the Colorado outdoor recreation industry. Thanks for coming to see us today.
Thank you. I appreciate the invitation, Director Prenzlow, Executive Director Gibbs. Morning, commissioners. So I know that I have about half an hour, and I promise not to take up the whole amount of time talking at you. I want to open this up for questions. My goal here is to just do a quick overview of our office, bore you to death with a little bit about my background and my new role as the director for the Office of Outdoor Recreation. And then if we've got time, I'll touch on a couple of our initiatives that we've launched here in 2020. Am I driving, Laura? Okay, thank you. So let me start with a quick history of the office. We were established in 2015 under the Hickenlooper administration. We were really established to recognize a couple of things. One, we have this incredible density of outdoor companies here in Colorado. We have a wealth of natural assets that drive an outdoor recreation economy. And we have this workforce that's emboldened by time spent outdoors and access to open lands and waters. So when Hickenlooper established this office with my predecessor, Luis Benitez, we were housed in the executive branch of government, specifically in the Office of Economic Development. So we are an economic development office with an eye to what we're doing here in the state and with an eye to developing businesses and relationships with our international partners. So our role is really to provide a central point of contact and advocacy and to support at the state level all the diverse constituents and communities that rely on the health of our outdoor recreation economy and the industry that it drives. As our umbrella office, OEDIT is charged by statute with advancing a positive business climate for the state. We are focused incredibly, we're very focused on expansion and retention of Colorado businesses and recruiting new businesses to Colorado as well. And so as a division of OEDIT, my office is particularly focused on a sector of our economy, and that is the outdoor recreation industry. As you can see, and I assume many of in the audience recognize this image from 2015, but our mission still stands as, we champion industry, communities, and people to come to life through Colorado's great outdoors. And so I appreciate this time today because we don't do this in a vacuum. We certainly do this in partnership with all of our departments here at state government and our federal, state, and NGO cohorts as well. So here's the boring part, a little bit about me. I'm told I always have to include this in a presentation for context. So let me start with just a couple of points. I, like many of you, am a native of Colorado. I'm actually a sixth generation native of Colorado. I've got some deep family roots that go to Craig and Alamosa and all throughout the San Juans with an eye to Silverton and Telluride in particular. I say that because I grew up here. I spent a lot of time playing in Colorado's open lands. I have an incredible passion for what we have as a state. I still think it's one of the best in terms of natural amenities and attractions. And that's informed my previous career, which has included 20 years in conservation and stewardship here in the state, both at the local level and at the federal level, working on public lands policy and working on water resources management. So I'm bringing that all as context into my new role as the director of the Office of Outdoor Recreation. I should also point out that is not a sack of potatoes. That is actually the seventh generation of my family who just turned 4 months this week. And that also informs my passion and why I think it's so important that our two divisions work together in shaping what the future of Colorado looks like, mostly for her benefit than mine. So for the past 12 years, I've worked as the regional director of a group called American Whitewater, with an eye, again, to water resource management here in a five-state region in the Colorado River Basin. And I left that position, well, first I was tapped by Hickenlooper and my predecessor, Luis Benitez, to join his advisory council along with several other people in the audience. So for 12 years, I served in that capacity, and for 4 years, I served as an advisor to Luis until I joined, left the NGO sector and joined the state in March as his deputy director. Luis quickly left, not because I joined him, but he had an opportunity to join the private sector. So I took the seat as director in late May, and so I'm not quite ready to celebrate my one-year anniversary, but we'll get there. So I want to focus now on why this office was created with an eye to economic development first. But we do economic development we approach economic development through the lens of three other priority impact areas that we focus on and that guide our work, and those would be conservation and stewardship, education and workforce training, and public health, wellness, and safety, all critical components of our outdoor recreation economy. So I think as a division of OEdit, we are first and foremost an economic development office, but we are established with these four primary goals, and because these are our goals, it also compels us to work in partnership with a number of our agencies across the state. So advancing economic development, our overarching goal is to improve the prosperity of all Coloradans throughout the state. And that aligns with our WIGs and the work that we're doing with the governor's office. We play a unique role in engaging the outdoor recreation industry in the conservation and sustainable and inclusive access to lands, waters, and protecting our climate in Colorado. That's the future of our industry, so we're all very invested in working with our partners to accomplish that goal. Mm-hmm. Education and workforce and training, like any industry, it's important to our talent pipeline. It's important to our future innovators and our future business owners here in the state. And public health, wellness, and safety, there's an obvious benefit to time spent outside. We are working with the governor's office on approaches to develop new toolkits that empower individual and workplace health by spending more time outside in a sustainable way. So let me focus a little bit on economic development first. I say this over and over, economic development is not just about business growth, it's not just about jobs. We are very intent on looking at economic development with an eye to the impact that outdoor recreation has on our outdoor spaces and on the people around us. We are, so part of our task as an office is to aid in employee recruitment and retention. We're driving development near recreation opportunities. We are attracting telecommuters and retirees through a list of the incentives that the State Office of Economic Development can offer in the space of retention and recruitment. And then we have, you know, lesser known ways that we're growing the industry. And I guess I will get right to the point, which is our strategy is informed by the knowledge that outdoor recreation is one of our key economic drivers in the state. And it includes a variety of different verticals. So it is very hard to define what we mean by an outdoor recreation industry. It touches on many different sectors of our economy, right? So that includes tourism, it includes advanced manufacturing, it includes the energy sector, it certainly includes information technologies and software. Education and workforce development, though, is, I think, one of the more exciting complements to our work in economic development, and we certainly work with a number of our educational partners around the state, looking at CMC, among many. So we promote diverse and inclusive training pathways, skill mastery, and what's really critical is this lifelong learning and the opportunities that we're creating. Because there are real needs in our industry from business research and workforce development. And as we accomplish this goal, we're also securing well-paying jobs, establishing new job markets across Colorado for the outdoor recreation industry. So we're developing curriculum. We provide advice on degree and certificate programs focused on the outdoor recreation. We do that with Colorado Mountain College. We do that with most of our higher ed institutions across the state. We also have a couple of programs where we can deploy cohorts from universities to assist rural communities in developing a vision for how they diversify their economic structures through outdoor recreation. The one that I would highlight here is a partnership with the University of Colorado and their Masters of the Environment program. We work with them closely on our Rural Technical Assistance Program, RTAP, formerly called Bluepoint 2.0, if you're familiar with it. And we've worked with a number of communities to develop either big picture schemes for how, or plans rather, for how they can diversify their economic structures, or specific projects to implement, new destination development, or amenities that would appeal to visitors and residents of Colorado alike. So, increasing spending in our rural parts of the state. A couple of other things that we do outside of higher ed, which would be a youth ambassador program, where we are pairing, underserved youth populations with opportunities in the industry to gain real job experience and training in the workforce. And then we have some exciting new programming for a couple of pilot sixth grade classes around the state, again, fostering a sense of stewardship of our public lands and waters, and also gaining a better understanding of what it actually means to be buying all the gear to play outside, where materials are sourced from, what our footprint is, and getting the carabiner or the climbing harness or the kayak delivered to your front door. It's a very interesting programming that we can talk about more. Health and wellness. Last year, we released the first ever outdoor RX report in the country. It's a body of scientific knowledge that really dives into the benefits to stress, to obesity, to more chronic conditions, the benefits to addressing those conditions through time spent outside. The report has been heralded. We're looking at a number of different states that are implementing some of the recommendations that came out of the report. And working with the governor's office this year, we have developed a new toolkit to encourage and support employers in creating more opportunities for their employees to spend time outside. Admittedly, the metrics around this kind of a program are hard to pin down, but our goal is to reduce the cost of healthcare for our employers, and obviously to track individual benefits in terms of health and stress reduction. Conservation and stewardship. This one I'm particularly passionate about given my history and our role at the state is to promote and advance coordinated efforts to protect and conserve our public lands. And we partner with our industry. That's our role, is to engage the industry in a number of these ongoing efforts. Director Prenslow has touched on a couple of these already. In addition to working with our NGOs, our foundation partners, and our rural communities to ensure that the industry is serving as a good steward. That's critical. Our industry does understand the connection between the health of our outdoor spaces and the opportunities for personal health, for job creation and retention, and rural economic development. So all of that said, we have a vision at the office, which is that together we are a diverse group of enthusiasts and innovators in the economic development space that support responsible use and stewardship of our outdoor spaces across the state. And it is a beautiful state, isn't it? So growing rural economies is a directive that we have under this administration. It's new to this office. It's not, it hasn't been as much of a focus in the past 4 years as it is today. And certainly leveraging the outdoor recreation industry and our rec opportunities to advance rural economic prosperity. So I wanted to touch on just a couple of quick programs that we're doing to help accomplish this. One, we are a small division at the Office of Economic Development, but we do have a pretty robust network of communities and regional partnerships around the state. So we're continuing to build regional outdoor recreation partnerships. We have seven currently in the state and two more that are being organized. And we're assisting this effort to encourage local communities to come together and look at the tools that the state offers in terms of economic development, job growth incentives, and pair them with our partner agencies in finding that balance that Director Prenslow mentions, which is economic development with an eye to protecting public lands, waters, and climate. I touched on RTAP already. That's the program with the University of Colorado. We've worked with seven communities now throughout the state developing plans to enhance outdoor recreation. The communities that we've worked with this year, just to illustrate the point, would be Trinidad around Fisher's Peak, Gilpin County, and also Steamboat Springs. And one of the initiatives in Steamboat Springs is to create another regional partnership in the Yampa Valley. We have funding through RTAP, so we award each of these communities with the resources to convene their communities, their members to come together and have some pretty robust conversations around what they want as in terms of a future vision. And then we provide the resources through our university partners to help draft the plan and come up with, implementation tactics. We're also launching in the first quarter here of 2020, the second half of our fiscal year, a new ROI grant program, so regional outdoor industry grant funding. We expect to announce the criteria here in the next, let's get through the outdoor retailer show. So we'll announce those in February. The intent is to provide real cash opportunities to rural communities to convene and participate in some of the ongoing conversations that are happening with Department of Natural Resources, CPW, DOLA, and certainly the other divisions that are housed underneath the Office of Economic Development. We have a huge menu of incentives and opportunities that we can leverage in rural communities. And what we're finding as we tour and visit with leaders across the state is that we need to do a better job of sharing what these resources are and deploying the opportunities that we have, such as the state's strategic fund, to help diversify our economies. So we're using the ROI grant program to cover the costs necessary to convene these communities to have conversations. It's all very exciting stuff, and Colorado continues. You know, we were the second state to create an Office of Outdoor Recreation. We were also the first state to convene the initial eight states here in Colorado exactly 2 years ago in January to have a conversation around how we come together to establish best practices for the outdoor recreation industry, how we advance our economies, how we accomplish things like rural economic development, and really just how do we support the growth and define our impact nationwide. The Confluence of States is a collection now of 15 states with offices of outdoor recreation that all subscribe to the same four primary impact areas of economic development, conservation and stewardship, public health, wellness and safety, and education and workforce training. Those four pillars of our office have become the national standards for any state that signs on to the Confluence Accords. In 2019, this was in July, we also partnered with those eight states and the National Governors Association to create a new outdoor recreation learning network. So there's a tremendous amount of interest from other governors and other administrations in establishing an Office of Outdoor Recreation and taking advantage of the same sort of federal programs that we try to deploy here in Colorado. And so the NGA Outdoor Recreation Learning Network was established. We now have over 30 states that are participating in this peer-to-peer network. And we share resources, we share best practices, research and dialogue, and we're networking to highlight how states can best advance outdoor recreation with our best practices and certainly with an eye to conservation and stewardship. And I think that I will leave it at that for an overview, although since we're all stuck in a room with closed blinds, I feel like we should enjoy our Colorado outdoor lifestyle. I think I'll leave it at that, and happy to take questions. Thank you again for the time. I'm really excited to be working across divisions here at the state, especially under this new administration. I think we all celebrate our outdoor heritage, our ag heritage. We certainly want to conserve our public lands, waters. We want to address issues around climate change as well, but we want to do it. We want to do economic development with an eye to all of those things. So happy to take questions, and I look forward to working with all of you in the future.
Thank you, Director Fay. I really appreciate it. After that video, I think every single one of us wants to just go outside and play. So extra kudos, everyone, I think, to addressing the stewardship and conservation component, which requires meetings all day, beautiful days, in windowless rooms to make sure that we are addressing stewardship and conservation and all of those things. So I know that I really want to go do all those things. Can we just adjourn and go play? Be much more fun. But thank you. This is incredibly important work that we all do. So questions for Director Fay, Commissioner Vigil.
Yes, a comment. I appreciate what outdoor recreation does for the health and wellness of the citizens that do participate in that. But I didn't hear you mention the health and wellness of wildlife. And there is an impact. We don't know how large, don't know how to really measure it, but outdoor recreation does have an impact on wildlife. So I hope you're working with our agency to put some guardrails around that somehow, and at least an education process for anybody who recreates outdoors, that there is an impact on wildlife, and we need to be aware of it so that we don't cause real damage to all the wildlife, the herds, the flocks, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And we certainly intend to keep working with Parks and Wildlife and DNR. And I would go further than that and say we're also working with the tourism office so that we can craft and distribute the appropriate messaging to visitors as well as residents, so we know how to play in the outdoors appropriately so that footprint is minimized.
Great.
Yeah.
And to follow up, because of Fisher's Peak, Trinidad State Junior College is actually starting a trail building curriculum.
Yeah.
And Trinidad is noted for just saying, we want a trail to the top of that hill, and they go out and build it. And it's city-owned property, but there are impacts. I actually attended one of their outdoor recreation advisory group meetings, mm-hmm. and told them, scale back. Before you do this, talk to a local wildlife officer. And at the same time, try to get a planning grant for a trail so that you encompass all those impacts on wildlife. So I hope they're heeding that, and so keep working in Trinidad on that.
It's an exciting time to be working in Trinidad. And so there's a biological assessment that's concurring as well as a recreational assessment. And what I find really exciting is that we've decided to tackle both of those critical components at the same time. So the recreation and conservation are working together to figure out what the future of Fisher's Peak looks like. And Tony Boone and the program at the State College down there is really exciting, one of many very targeted, very focused programs that we're very supportive of in the state.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Commissioner Hauser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Nathan. I'll just say for the record, if anyone wants to see pure magic on a river, go out with Nathan for a couple days. It's pretty spectacular. So your background, I think, is actually really important for us to know. So thanks for including that. Just a couple things. Maybe at some point before you leave the podium, you could talk to us a little bit about a show that's coming in a couple of weeks, the Convention Center. Also interested in maybe having you talk a little bit more about the sort of workforce development efforts that you're doing, particularly related to diversity and inclusivity, and having that pipeline be more representative of our entire state and including the adaptive sector. If you would, and then perhaps Commissioner Schaefer will ask this, but also interested in sort of not letting a good crisis go to waste with the tri-state announcement, and how you're maybe thinking about your office playing a role, or how it is playing a role.
So we have another half hour to go through all that.
Sorry.
Let me work backwards. We are working with Western Slope communities that are dealing with the issues around, you know, closing down the power plants, closing down the coal mines. Specifically, we've been working with the Telluride Foundation, the West End EDC, around a new trail system to position Nucla and Naderita in the west end of Montrose County with a new destination to market. And it's really interesting to see that community, and having worked down there for nearly two decades, they're very interested in embracing outdoor recreation. They're very interested in looking at the EMTB market and kind of grasping a hold of that emerging technology and creating a niche in that part of the state that can be marketed for something that's new and emerging. It's really exciting. In the northwest part of the state, in Commissioner Schaefer's region, we have been approached by Moffat County Tourism, by the City of Craig, for assistance in helping develop a plan to diversify their economy as well with an eye to outdoor recreation. We've worked on similar initiatives in the past in terms of their trail system, celebrating the Yampa River, which throws right through the heart of town, improving access by doing it again with an eye to wildlife impacts, riparian impacts, fish and wildlife impacts. So we are working on those two communities. Outdoor Retailer is the show that you've alluded to. It is coming up here at the end of January. It's one of two annual shows that we are welcome, that we do welcome to Denver every year. This is the Outdoor Retailers and Snow Show coming up at the end of January. This is one of the biggest trade shows in the country. Our role is really to support Visit Denver and Emerald Expositions, the owners of these trade shows, in creating something that's really beneficial for all of Colorado and certainly for our industry. OIA is also a huge partner. The Outdoor Industry Association is a huge partner in these shows. There's a fairly robust schedule of educational events. A lot of those are designed around issues of justice, equity, diversity, inclusion, climate action, workforce development, and more broadly, conservation of places where we are seeing an increase in outdoor recreation and the footprint that comes with it. I'm happy to share maybe with Director Prenslow a schedule if that would be of interest to the commissioners. We'd be happy to get that out there. On workforce, I think that was your third question. The industry is very concerned with issues around justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion. Particularly, the things that my office is doing right now, we do have funding to support fellowships and scholarships for underserved communities that are interested in entering our industry. And we have a fellowship with Western State with our Outdoor Industry MBA program. We do have a youth ambassador program, I think I mentioned, which is designed specifically to embrace opportunities that can be opened up to inner city youth that haven't had the exposure to the outdoors. We hear that frequently, especially here in Denver, that they can see the mountains, but they've never actually been there. So we're looking to break down those barriers. In addition to breaking down the cost of gear, especially for underserved communities in rural parts of our state, through the establishment of gear libraries with our regional partnership coalitions. So we're working on that with a number of different fronts, but admittedly, we're working on it in partnership with all of our affinity group members that advise my office through the group. Great questions, though. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Adams.
Thank you. Just to add to that point, not just the pipeline itself, but I was recently surprised by it. Not surprised. I recently came across an article that talked about the lack of investment funding for African American and Latinx communities who have actually better credit scores than white counterparts. And so wondering what your office is doing or considering doing, or A, is this an issue that's on your radar screen as far as, when we think about the pipeline, I appreciate that conversation. But then, you get these individuals with the opportunity, with the skill sets, the knowledge, and then when it's time to actually take on a position of leadership, they don't have the access to the funding. And so just curious if this is an issue that has been raised in your office, and if this is something that your office has considered addressing.
So it is an issue that has come across, but it's not an issue that the Outdoor Rec Office is specifically addressing. We do have the privilege of working in partnership with the Minority Business Office, the Office of Business Funding and Incentives, and our Global Business Development Office, all, again, under OEdit. So it's really, they're the experts, and we're there to support.
Right. I just offer it because it's specific. I have several friends, mentors who have tried to enter the outdoor industry in not moving from a consumer to an actual leader, and have encountered several issues as it relates to access to capital. And so, you know, I hope that, you know, as we see a continued escalation of or increase in the outdoor industry here in Colorado, that we also address that historical barrier to access for Black and brown communities. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Maybe you and I can keep working on that one.
Yeah. Great. Thank you, Director Fay. A couple of things I know we heard that we'll follow up on for sure, and I know we've had commissioners attend Outdoor Retailer in the past, so I think that's something that if you are interested in going, work with Director Penslow or myself and make sure we attend. So thank you so much. Look forward to continuing to work together. Director Penslow.
Yeah, thank you, Director Fay. And if you get that, we usually have Commissioner Pass, so just let me know.
Okay, good.
Great.
Great. Thanks, all.
Thank you. We are a little behind on our break. That doesn't mean I'm going to take it away from you because I need one, too. So we do have a 15-minute schedule. Sorry, Commissioner or Director Greenberg.
Just before we go to break, I wanted to answer the question from earlier about Ag Day. Ag Day at the Capitol is March 25th, so we will be set up cooking food, serving the people, so please do come join us. Thank you.
Get there early. The food runs out.
I'm going to take 5 minutes away from your break, though it was 15 minutes. Now it's going to be 10, so let's be back at – it's currently about 10:15. Let's be back at 10:25, please. All right, let's go ahead and get started. A couple of quick mentions before I ask Justin to come up. I apologize. I wanted to welcome Rick Enstrom, former commissioner. Thank you for being here. Thanks for joining us. I also wanted to make a quick note. I did hear from Commissioner McDaniel. Knee surgery went well. He had knee replacement. He should be home from the hospital today. He is. He sent me a few comments on the agenda before he went into surgery, so he's not going to send me comments while he's on pain meds, but just wanted to give a quick update on that. Justin. Welcome. Oh, sorry, Director Penslow. Hold on just a sec.
Just thank you, Madam Chair. Just one more update. So we'd scheduled those pictures for commissioners tomorrow at lunch, but several commissioners are going to be gone at least tomorrow at lunch. So we'll have staff just outside the door here at about 11:45 outside by the Junipers. And if you're so inclined, anytime after 11:45 and during the lunch hour. So if, you know, whoever's talking is a little more boring, you can slip out, or you can just go out on your way from lunch or back, and you can get your headshot done.
And just that we're not doing another group commission photo, right? That's just individual headshots.
Individuals. We will do a group annually, and that will be part of this whole thing, but not today.
Great. Oh, Commissioner Garcia.
Director, are they equipped to do airbrushing and some digital improvements?
For you, yes.
Thank you.
Comes at an extra cost. All right, Justin, ready to be wowed by your financial wizardry.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, Commission Director. My name is Justin Rutter. I'm the Assistant Director for Financial Services. I did notice that Director Prinsloo made eye contact with me when he said that if the speaker's a little more boring. We're talking about budget process today, so I don't know how you could possibly find that boring. But just in case, I will not be offended. So I think with this meeting, we're marking a little bit of a shift in my presentations. I think we talked about this morning in the Finance Subcommittee. Going to take a lot of the numbers offline and off the screen because they're so hard to see anyway and have those conversations with the Finance Subcommittee. The Subcommittee then may flag additional issues over to the larger commission, whereas my presentations in front of you will be largely, unless there's major things going on, will be largely about more policy-oriented parts of budget. So today I'd like to talk to you about the budget process, which sounds exciting, but it's really the conversations intended to be how do we go from ideas or policies or desires to changes in budget allocations. And I want to highlight a few processes. As with everything with budgeting, it kind of depends on what you're trying to do as far as what the correct path is, but these are kind of the main processes that we have conversations with not only the legislature but our grantors on kind of where we want to reallocate our resources or where we need additional resources. So this first line of arrows is the kind of the standard way we talk to the legislature. It could be referred to as the decision item process. And if you follow across all those dates in the circles, it's about an 18-month process. So in December, CPW kicks off an internal budget process where line-level staff through managers all the way up to LFE develop resource requests. They allocate their base budgets, but then they also identify areas where more resources are needed. That goes up through the chain of command until you hit the LT budget retreat in March. That's when all ideas come together that were unable to be funded within existing resources, within existing budgets. LT meets in March and discusses those items and then kind of says yes or no for where we want to take the agency with our funding. Those kind of, if we need a decision item to talk to the legislature about, that needs to go to DNR's budget office kind of in the May timeframe. That is further vetted by the Department of Natural Resources, the Executive Director's Office, and then goes on to the Governor's Office in the summer. That all culminates in a November budget request to the legislature. They discuss those requests starting in December and into the spring and make kind of final decisions typically around March for funding that will be available in July. So as you can see with the number of arrows and the time involved during the typical decision item process, it's about an 18-month process to go from idea to new allocation from the legislature. Another path that we could take, well, I should go back and highlight one part. After the LT budget retreat, Financial Services kind of takes all the decisions that are made, applies our 27 different funding sources, our 230 different grants that are available, our all of the possible money, and kind of lays out for the leadership team a funding plan. How can we accomplish this and what are the appropriate sources? And then that kind of dictates which process we go through. So that's the first one. We may also decide that a better process would be to go with a special bill, as we are seeing a Senate Bill 03 for Fisher's Peak development. Still, typically, legislative ideas are due to the executive director's office in the spring time frame and then won't be acted on until the next session. But of course, there's exceptions to those. Again, you can see instead of going to approval by the governor's office, instead of going through the budget request, we find sponsors, we get legislation introduced, and then how we write the appropriations clause within that legislation determines when the funding is available. After that funding plan analysis, we might decide that instead of going to the legislature or appropriated funding sources, we may want to go to a non-appropriated funding source. In this case, the feds. So this federal grant timeline is more focused on Pittman-Robinson and Dingell-Johnson funds. We take those decisions out of the March LT budget retreat, and then we immediately start writing federal grants for both our base kind of activities that we do every year or new activities that we might think of this as an appropriate funding source for. And those grants are typically handed in the May to June timeframe and are approved in 45-ish days, so we usually get final approval in July. So funding is available kind of on a quicker timeline there. Another major funding source that we go through is GOCO. This is a similar process to the decision item process, really. We take the decisions out of the budget retreat. We write GOCO investment plan. In fact, our draft GOCO investment plan went over for staff review last week, and that will be decided upon in the March GOCO meeting with funding available as soon as we get signatures and set up in core. So I think what I had been hearing some was kind of how do we affect the budget? How do we get changes done? How do we get things done? And so these kind are the kind of four major, very official, very regimented processes that we go through that get that done. Depending on the project involved, there's any other number of sort of paths we could go. One example might be chronic wasting disease, which is obviously a concern of this commission, a concern of the division. From those conversations that we've been having about chronic wasting disease, staff last year looked at what they're doing, what they could do more of, which would be more mandatory testing and what that would cost. That went through our internal budget process and was approved by a leadership team. However, we did not follow any of those four processes to implement that. It was about an increase of $200,000 to increase our mandatory testing. Leadership team prioritized resources to get that done, and you are hearing about the effects of that today. We've done more testing. We've got more units identified. We have more data on chronic wasting disease. So my least favorite answer as a budget manager is it depends. But really, when you're trying to get something done, it really depends on what the dollar figure, what the actual activity is, how big it is, and how much of a priority it is. We can always reprioritize any number of resources for an important enough issue. With that, any excuse me, any questions on the budget process?
Director Penza.
Is that the end, or is that?
That's it.
That's the end. Okay. So, thank you. I'd just like to publicly thank Justin. So, well, let me start out. When he says budget retreat, you fiscal conservatives in the room, that's 2 days in a government office wrapped around papers. There's not a lot of retreat that I've seen. So I just, you know, like to be on the record of that. So maybe we'll change that, but that's a different vision than the meetings that actually happen. So I would like to publicly thank Justin. So he and I talked about trying to how we could just jointly make this more effective for commissioners on budget. So you saw some changes this morning in your subcommittee with some staff. I call them the whisperer, you know, Jeff Gerard. And not that Justin's not good, but Jeff is very very capable. So all of Justin's staff is. And then to try and bring this back up to kind of a policy level and not get into the detail of the commission. So I would encourage you to continue to talk to Justin or I, and I, but I want to publicly thank him as a great job.
Commissioner Vigil.
We talked about this morning, because of the interest in the Crazy French Ranch, the funding for that, if you would go through that, break it down, where the money's coming from, why it's such a good deal for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So as Director Prinsloo mentioned this morning, we did go through CDC for their advice on whether we should acquire this property and did receive a 5-1 approval rate, so we'll be moving forward. It's obviously the culmination of a lot of work by a lot of people to get to this point. Kind of the first piece of funding that came in line was during your 2018 RFP. You did approve Fisher's Peak as a $7 million Habitat Stamp funded acquisition. At the time, it was a conservation easement with eventual ownership undetermined, perhaps. As conversations evolved, the opportunity for Colorado Parks and Wildlife to acquire that property and fee title became evident, and the opportunity to manage it for both conservation and wildlife purposes, along with a state park and recreation purposes, is an irresistible opportunity for us. So we did come back to you with that $7 million Habitat Stamp funding request and requested to change to fee title acquisition, and with this new idea of conservation and recreation management. We, at the same time, were in conversations with GOCO, and you did authorize Director Prinsloo to send a letter to GOCO and request, which GOCO has approved, $9.75 million of Parks Quadrant GOCO. So that brings Colorado Parks and Wildlife's commitment to this project up to $16.75 million. The total purchase price, however, is $25 million. Back during the RFP time frame, Trust for Public Lands and Nature Conservancy did separately go to GOCO Open Space Quadrant and request a $7.52 million grant. They received the first disbursement kind of at closing, and the second disbursement of that $7 million will be upon transfer to a public entity. So there's another $7.52 million from GOCO Open Space Quadrant, which is not typically one of our funding sources that we pursue, which brings us up to 24-ish million. The remainder of the value is donated value from Trust for Public Lands and the Nature Conservancy, made possible by their supporters and donors. So they closed on the property earlier this year. We will close on the property this upcoming year for less than they paid for it.
Great. Anyone else from the finance? Commissioner Bray.
Thank you. A different subject, Justin. Could you reiterate in our committee meeting this morning, we were talking about our wildlife cash fund, non-committed, has exceeded what we have set as policy, and we were just roughly discussing some big sky opportunities to do some projects or to fund some things, but it was also cautioned that we have a declining elk herd in many areas of the state, and you made a comment that, and I can't quote you, that's why I'm asking for the comment back, for every certain percentage loss in elk licenses sold amounts to what? Can you reiterate what you said there?
Yeah, absolutely. So this kind of came about in the future generations analysis when we were doing our financial projections. One of the things that the leadership team discussed was the concern about declining L curves. We put in an assumption that over time we would see a decline in licenses available of 1%. And for every year that you reduce licenses by 1%, it's about a $1 million reduction in revenue.
So 1% decline equals $1 million. That's huge. That's very huge. So, and as we talk about all these budget issues, and yeah, we might be sitting on a pretty nice surplus right at the moment. Let's be cautious.
Fair point. Anyone else? Okay, Justin, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Krista, I think you're going to be with us now for what? 5 days? Just about? Okay. I'm ready for your fast speed talking and ready, go.
Okay. Good morning, Commissioners, Madam Chair, Executive Director Gibbs, Director Prenslow. I am Krista Heiner, Regulations Manager. And as you have probably seen, we have a very large regulatory agenda today. So I'm going to try to go through these changes fairly quickly, but I would invite you to please stop me if you have questions or comments. So let's just get started then with agenda item 10, which is chapter P7, passes, permits, and regulations. This is yellow in color on your devices. We are at step 2 of 2, and the issue before us is increasing fees for daily vehicle park passes by $1. You'll find these changes on page 2 and 12 of the attached documents. And so essentially this means that daily vehicle passes will cost $9 for most state parks, $10 for Chatfield, Boyd Lake, El Dorado Canyon, and $11 for Cherry Creek due to the Water Basin Authority fee, which is added on in addition to that. And this change is expected to generate approximately $1 million more dollars in revenue. So that is a relatively short agenda item. And so if there are any questions,
any questions on agenda item 10? Yeah, or motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move agenda item 10 as presented by staff.
Thank you. Second by Vigil. We can do a roll call vote. All in favor, I'm sorry, voice vote. All in favor, please say up. Public comment. I don't have any blue sheets on item 10. Is there any public comment for agenda item 10? Thank you, Councilman Matter. Okay. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you. And Krista, before you continue, I have two different versions of obviously the motions and stuff.
Correct.
Is it that the new one that was landed is staff is looking for a separate bullet item directive on each one?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Just to make sure I was clear.
Yeah, that'll come into play, I think, later on. I mean, it's up to your discretion, obviously, but that's what we're thinking might work best for.
Okay. We want to do what is most directive for staff, so we don't have to come revisit. So,
great.
Thank you. Okay.
Sounds good. So we'll move on then to item number 11, which is Chapter 0, General Provisions, and also related provisions of Chapter W3, Chapter W5, and Chapter W2. This is blue in color on your devices. This is, again, step 2 of 2. The first thing that I'd like to discuss is creating a senior small game and fishing combination license, which you can find those changes on page 40 in Chapter W0 and page 2 in Chapter W3, which is green and attached to the end. This is, as you may remember, in response to a citizen petition, and the petitioner is with us in the audience again today, Mr. Montgomery. And he was petitioning for a senior, age 65 and older, small game and fishing combination license, which we have created. And the current pricing, as you'll see in the draft red line version, is at $28. And this current pricing is consistent with the discount offered for the resident non-senior combination license that we offer. In November, the commission directed us to perform an analysis of other price scenarios. So you'll find that on page 3 after the introductory memo related to this agenda item. So we looked at pricing at $28, $30, and $32, which you can see there. A price comparison of resident, senior, small game, and fishing combination licenses in other Western states is also available for your reference. It's on page 4 after the price analysis. And you'll find that the average price of these licenses is $26.88, which is in line with our proposed pricing of $28 as well. So I don't know if you'd like to take questions on this particular item specifically, or if we should go through the whole chapter W-2 first.
I do have a blue slip on this particular item, so we can do a public comment on that and any discussion if that's okay, and then we can continue.
Sure.
Okay. Mr. Montgomery from YAMPA.
I was just wanting to thank the staff and the commission for looking into this proposal and everything, and hopefully in a few minutes we will have a new license structure for senior citizens of Colorado.
Thank you, Mr. Montgomery. Any questions or comments from commissioners on this topic? Commissioner Garcia.
I just wanted to thank you for bringing this to our attention.
Okay. Commissioner Vigil.
Just a quick question. What is a senior citizen? What's the age?
65 and older.
It is 65. That sounds pretty young for them.
All right, Krista, go ahead.
Great. We'll move on to the next part, which is adding the letter X to the list of Hunt Code manners of take to denote season choice licenses. This you'll find on page 6 of Chapter W-0, and then also throughout Chapter W-2 in the version that's attached to Item 12 of your packet there. So this is to better differentiate season choice licenses from regular rifle hunts. So we have added the letter X to the list of manners of take in Regulation 1A5, which is on page 6, and the corresponding hunt codes have been updated, which, as I've mentioned, you'll see in the version of Chapter 2 that's attached to Item 12. Moving on, we have authorizing the use of TAN, Temporary Authorization Number, as valid documentation of Colorado waterfowl and federal duck stamp purchase for up to 14 days from the date of purchase. This is on page 7 of Chapter W-2, and page 3 and 4 of Chapter W-5, which is sort of purple in color on your devices. The regulations in Chapter W-0 and related regulations in Chapter W-5 have been changed to allow a TAN to be used for both Colorado waterfowl and federal duck stamp for up to 14 days from the date of purchase until the purchaser receives the physical license. Moving on, we have updated the counties listed for the boundary description of GMUs 20 and 522, you can find on page 5 and page 27. We've added Wells County to Unit 20, and we have deleted. Sorry, we have deleted the Watch County. Testing. 1, 2, 3.
Okay.
All right. Sorry about that. So as I was saying, we've added Wells County to Unit 20, and we have deleted Sawatch County and added Delta County to Unit 5.1. Moving on to modifying the GMU boundaries for F-11, F-13, F-17, and F-26. Previously, the GMU boundaries in these units differed slightly between bighorn sheep and mountain goats. So to make the boundaries consistent, the bighorn sheep boundaries in F-11, F-13, F-17, and F-26 have been modified to follow mountain goat boundaries, which is consistent with trails and roads